This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 916, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
They can make things worse for me. Sometimes I'd rather die. They can tell me lots of things, but I can't see eye to eye. Well, I know they know the way I think. No, they always will. Someday I'm gonna change my mind. Sometimes I'd rather kill.
My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, the ever-present, ever-stalwart, Josh Flanagan.
That's how is he? He's ever present. He's just always there. There he
just
is.
Can't get rid of him.
That was a peppy read so far. I got you.
Well,
you put
I'm trying to wake myself
it.
Up.
Yeah,
it's been a long week.
He's excited to be here.
I've had days and days of early morning meetings, and I could put my head right down right now and go to sleep, but I won't because this is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 916, and every week one of us reads their stack of comics. And they pick the favorite one. We call that the Pick of the Week. And we'll do that book and other books in the week, the patron pick, and listener mail, and we have fun. We have a good time. Despite being really tired, I'm going to come out of this recording session amped up. That's what happens all the time.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I have a cold. It's not a bad cold. It's a little cold, but I have a cold. It's unfair. I've got my little mute button here. Like, I'm just like not a terrible cough, but there'd be like little coughs.
I feel like the 40s is just constantly having a cold.
I don't know, man.
Or constantly coming out of having a cold, or about to have a cold.
I feel all right. Like it's not.
It is the winter
bad.
You are
just
New
kind
England.
Of. It's right. No, it's all that. It's dry out or whatever. But I did walk in the other room, and my wife looked at my face, and she goes, "You look really tired." I was like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "You get a look when you're tired. Big bags under your eyes." And I was like, "Yeah."
That's just how I look.
No. There's a level. There's a level. I can pull off younger than this, but not today.
It's good because you had the pick. Spoiler warning, yada, yada, yada. Josh had the pick. Yes, I yada, yada.
We're all ready to go. I thought there was going to be a little more time I could ramp up.
No.
Pick of the week is Alien Black, White, and Black, White, and Blood, number one. You know. There it is.
Marvel does these. They've had several of these black, white, and color miniseries.
Yes.
And this is the Alien version.
Have you read? Because they're basically like their takeoffs on the, what was Batman Black and White?
DC and Black. Yeah, DC Black and White series.
DC was a Superman, which was red, white,
this
and blue.
This is your second 20th Century Studios comic. pick of the
week. I like these comics. I've liked them. Yeah. I've liked all of them so far.
I was initially surprised when you sent the list, and I was like, oh, you know, actually, that makes sense.
Well, I read these black, white, and red, or whatever they are. I've read, like, not all of them, but I've given most of them a shot because I really like the short anthology form when done well. I don't love the 80-page anthology because usually it's too many stinkers. But sure. When you got three here, either they're pretty good or short enough you don't have to worry. But read down the list of names. I recognize most of them. We have a story by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, who are now writing 75% of all Marvel books, as far as I can tell, with art by Michael Dowling. And I recognize that name. And all day today, I've said, I got to remember who that is.
He did that Image book that we really liked a lot about the tech people.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. It was picked like four times. It was good. It was really good.
There you go. Then there's a story by Stephanie Phillips with Marcelo Ferreira on art. And then the last story is by Ryan Cady, who I've never heard of, and Devmalia Pramanak on art, who I've also never heard of. Regardless, a nice little set of three stories. The first one is a part one, so this will be continued through the series. The others are sort of one and done little shots. There is something about Alien comics, especially in the sort of Marvel era, mm-hmm. that, and it's the same thing with the Predators, which is why you'd mentioned like me and these sort of Fox comics, is that.
Well, you picked Planet of the Apes.
Did I? Well, yeah, I could have picked those. Ed Brisson's been doing a hell of a Predator book, and another one came out next part of the arc this year. And it's just like what they're all doing is staying in the lane. Of not mm-hmm. like, we're not going to reinvent the alien. I said the same thing about the Apes book. Is like, we're going to do the and over the years, I've really become a big Alien fan. Aliens, yeah, Alien, have. Whatever. You know, like the moment that sort of the film, the first one clicked for me. And then after that, I was like, I'm just into this.
But your favorite one's the third one for some reason.
That is not true. Although I can appreciate the third and the fourth one for certain things. So this first bit is... basically, every single story has to be about man's hubris. And the alien's not the bad guy. It's just that we keep putting ourselves where they are, or we keep putting other humans where they are to see what happens or for our personal gain.
And that's, every one of them is. How you do it, right? When you say, you know, when you don't reinvent the wheel, it's either overconfident people or people who should know better or who are too strident. Walking face first into a rake, which in this case is a giant xenomorph. Like that is the way you do an alien story. And that's what the first story is basically.
There's not another level to it. There's not like some secret history of the aliens. No. They just are. And if you stick with that, it's fine. And then the story is about the people who are stuck in it. And it doesn't even have to be that imaginative. When you're reading of an alien comic, you have to see the best part of it is the moment where you're like, well, you shouldn't have done that. And so this ship, like it's the utopia. It's like, we're here. I'm the leader of this crew. Let's dock. All right. We got a good seal. Everything's fine. Second, they open the door. Those motherfuckers come in and then they run to another room.
Well, it's,
and then, wait. Yeah. The robot does something he shouldn't have or no one expected. That's it.
Yeah,
there's a synth. He does that.
It helps. I mean, I thought this was one of the best things Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing have written. It helped. I think the Michael Dowling art helped a lot. But I just thought even as part one, as a single story, I thought it was really strong.
It could have been done.
It could have definitely just been a one-part story. Because you know how it's going to go from here. It's just a matter of watching them all die now.
Yeah.
But... I mean, something else could happen, but ultimately, that's what you're going to be watching. But the whole thing is, it's a spaceship full of young socialists who see things very much their way. And you know, at one point, they're like, "Should we unfreeze the Marines that are in the hold?" And they're like, "We have Marines. Like, we are supposed to be about peace." And I was just like, "Oh, you guys are all going to die." And that's why they go to rescue this. They stumble upon this ship that they are sensing one life form on. Of course, the life form is the xenomorph, and so no one else in the region. All the other commercial ships ignore it because it's not worth their time and money and fuel to go help it. So they go because they're progressives. And this is not a commentary. This is what they say.
No.
And they, of course, it leads to their death, or it's going to lead to all their deaths.
I just like that in
beautiful,
a very
beautiful story,
it's gorgeous. Gorgeous. And the sort of black, white, and red, like they called red blood in this because, you know, that the format really makes for fun art, I think. And you take away one of the tools that the artists normally have and you see what they can do with it. An artist like Michael Dowling's going to come in and, you know, just the black and white stuff on its own, you just don't get to see it that much. The comics don't get produced that way. Beautiful shadows and you know, dot pitch stuff.
They did cheat, though. There was a lot of green in this as well.
Was there?
This issue.
Okay. Well, the first, and they definitely have a gradient of red. That sort of first page of this ship, the forward, like the cool design of that. I really love how that looks. I can't get enough of the sort of giant spaceships that they do in these. I'm not sure where it is. There's some line in here. It was like it took 3 seconds for them to all go back on what they, their ideals.
Right. Just like, they become dictators. Yeah.
Yeah. Like immediately.
That the cut off part of the ship, because that's the part that the alien is in from the rest of the ship, they decide to unilaterally, after having to making a big pain to show they vote for everything, those who are there decide to make the executive decision to become dictators and
sacrifice those who are not there, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Following into that, Stephanie Phillips, one of my favorite names to see attached to a comic book still, because it's always going to be interesting. Even if it's not my favorite thing, I do not know what to expect, and except that I know it's a great mind behind those books. And this one is a great single short story. Again, Hubris. The good folks at Weyland-Yutani have decided to offer the ultra-rich chance to hunt for sport. Now, we've seen many versions of this story, certainly in comics over the years, where highfalutin folks who have a lot of money go in. They're going to hunt something because they want the thrill and they think that they're the best. And in this case, it's the xenomorphs. I don't have to tell you what happens to the people who paid.
Weyland-Yutani decides to breed xenomorphs for this hunting, you know, like their safari, you know, hunts. And you've got an actor, a tech bro, a scary Russian lady, and then some other guy. I forgot. Oh, he was an arms dealer.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be wearing these skin tight, you know,
like shield. Shield.
I was going to say deflector shields, but that's not right.
Right. It's a special suit that protects them
from the xenomorphs, even if they get hurt. But then the guys running the hunt decide they hate them, so they turn the power off and they lose their shields and they get killed. And then the Twilight Zone twist is that the xenomorphs then kill the guys. But it was a good, really good short story as well.
Great short story. You know, again, hubris. Hubris of the one people, then hubris of the others. And in the end, the alien is always left standing. And they're not satisfied. Final story, a little more hopeful, I think, than any alien story. But, there's always a kid who's getting away.
It's hard to have a kid get pulled apart by an alien. You know?
It's true, but they've, you know, the four folks on LV-427 or six, LV-426 didn't have much to do with it. It's just Newt. But do you know what I think of every single time I think of the movie Aliens?
No.
It's our friend Mike Romo quoting Newt, which he must have said to us 15 years ago at a comic convention. And it was, I'm trying to remember the line. They go away mostly. That's it. They go away at night mostly. Mostly. I always think of that. Romo said it and he laughed about it real hard. Anyway, in this mother, in the original movie, they used it a lot. The main computer system of the Nostromo was the mother program. Right. And in this ship, the independent research vessel, a Bartok. The aliens are aboard. The containment has failed, so Weyland-Yutani was shipping the xenomorphs again. Kill everybody on board except one little kid, Joshua, so I felt for him. And Mother sort of guides him to the escape vessel, and at the very last second, it pops away from the ship as the self-destruction happens. I just told you exactly what happens in the story, but if you started reading it, you'd know what happened. You know,
we know. We spoiled all the
stories. This isn't about that. It's about the journey and the art. Oh, there's green in this.
There's green in all of them. It should be called Black, White, and Brown.
Oh, here's why. No. No, they accounted for it. The title...
Oh, it's blood. It's the alien's blood.
It's black, white, and blood. The blood is green, therefore they get to use that color.
You win this round, Marvel. That's pretty good. All right. You outsmarted me.
You know, there's definitely... That child is definitely implanted that flew off the ship. Like, it seems like he got away.
The thing is, if you can't spoil an alien story.
No.
Because it's you know what's going to happen. So it's just a matter of how much fun is it to watch. And it's been fun. I really liked the first... I mean, I haven't entered my alien renaissance that you have. I liked that miniseries we read a couple... I don't know. It could be a couple of months or a couple of years ago.
The Philip Kennedy Johnson one? Because then it was a Declan Shalvey run after that.
I liked that one. I didn't stay on the book after that arc, but I liked it a lot.
That was the best one, yeah.
And this was really fun, too. So I'm glad you picked it because I hadn't read it before you picked it.
Yeah, I had a lot of books. I think I had over 20.
Me too.
I liked books. I had fun reading them, but actually I got to the point where I had to pick and I was like, I had no idea. And I thought, oh, that's that one. I enjoyed that the most. It was the one that, unexpected, but also expected as we, discussed. It was really well done.
I also liked a lot of books and I had one in my head. I would have made the pick. It wouldn't have been this one. But when I read it, I was like, yep, that was really good. And I see why it was the pick and I don't have a problem with it. Like, it was very good.
God, we don't want to have another one of those shows.
I don't want to have that. But I mean, the third story was my least favorite. The first two were terrific. The third one was fine. It was fine. It wasn't bad.
Yeah, it was beautifully drawn, and I like that shot of there's on the last page of the little ship getting away. The little boop, like there's that burst of air. And I like those kind of shots in space.
The opening shot of the ship with the ring ship was beautiful.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Really well, really beautiful book. Michael Dowling, every time he shows up, I was like, oh, right, this guy's terrific.
Yeah, yep. So much talent.
When I finished Batman, Superman, World's Finest, number 24, which is the final issue of the Kingdom Come arc, two thoughts. One, Dan Mora really needs to draw a New God story. His Dark Side is terrific. And... the New Gods haven't been like almost like everything in the DC universe. You don't know where their place is anymore, right? Are they the big bads of the? We don't even know any. They rarely show up.
Taken out at some point. Like Darkseid, did he die? Like they were off the board. They needed to pave the way for 15 straight years of Joker stories.
So, which continues this week. So. I think, and I realized Final Crisis, he was the bad guy in it. And Final Crisis was kind of like the last major DC event that meant anything. But I would consider having these guys, this team, do an event that really reestablishes Darkseid as the villain of the DC universe, as the number one bad guy, as the danger lurking above the, out in the forest. Like that should be, I would love to see these guys do an event where you're just like this. Really show us why the Dark Side and the New Gods are so awesome because he draws them really, really well.
Yeah, I think that the presentation of Dark Side in this issue, I really like. You'd said he's a villain, but he's almost just like he's the antagonist. He's the immovable object. He's the antithesis.
Right.
Anti-life,
I feel like
whatever.
He should always be the White Walker. He should always be. On the other side of the wall, which in DC's case is kind of literally the source wall. Yeah. And he should always be in danger of coming over that wall. And they should always be terrified of it. And I just don't get that sense anymore. And when he does show up and he's done right, like here, I'm just looking at the page where he backhands the Flash who runs at him. He doesn't even really have to move. And it's just a great drawing of Darkseid. I just really miss when they were whenever they showed up, you were like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was my main thought coming out of the book. But also, the other thought was, I have no idea how this could possibly fit into Kingdom Come. And so my thought is, this is a fun little Elseworlds story. Because I don't see how you could possibly make this make sense with the rest of the Kingdom Come story.
And they kind of tied it in the end. I was like,
They tried to, but it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't, yeah. But it doesn't have to. And they were like, all right, here's maybe how it does. And you're out. Just do it in a page. Shit goes wrong. Fine. I really like that Darkseid didn't Like, he just was a force. He didn't beat anybody. He just sort of showed up, took what was his, or I'm trying to remember what happened. But, you know, like, it's funny, though, that, like, oh, David, you're back again. Now you're going to be good. I'm like, he's not. Stop doing it. Like, this, it's interesting, because when he first showed up years ago now, I guess, as the kid, yeah, I was like, this character's super annoying. Why are we spending time with him? And then he comes back, and you're like, oh, he's even worse. And then you go forward, and you're like, oh, he's this character who we didn't understand or know before, who is super annoying. Like, it's not as if he's telling the origin of the Magog.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Magog, right? Not
Magog,
because Gog's the big god one. Okay. Yep. He's sort of telling the origin of that Magog character, not so much to be like, this is what happened, but this is how a character gets to be like that, and this is how it's intertwined with these DC characters. And I'm kind of okay with that. I like the long shot of it. I like the fact that we didn't know what it was from the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a deep cut in a way, even though it's one of the biggest stories ever. It's not like people are talking about Magog. And it's also one of those characters who they didn't keep flogging out there forever. Like, he sort of showed up. I want to say maybe he showed up once or twice in Justice Society
or
something like that.
Maybe. I don't remember. But, yeah. He doesn't really come around all the time. It's not like Doomsday where they just ran him into the ground.
Or Darkseid previously.
Right. I want to give a shout out to Tamara Bonvillain on Colors, who did a really great job of making the Spectre glow in the way that Alex Ross was able to with paint.
Yep.
That is kind of really difficult to do in flat, you know, comics. When the giant Spectre shows up, I looked for a second to see if it was painted, because the way they colored it was different than the other characters and gave him that glow. Really looked nice.
I will go ahead and take that one step further and go ahead and give Steve Wands credit for doing really nice looking looks, hand drawn, you know, non-digital looking Spectre word balloons with the sort of flaming green around them. I think he drew them. I don't see a way around. I mean, you might have probably drew them digitally, but some old school lettering there.
Looks good. It still remains my favorite DC book, even if, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me. It still was really fun. I really enjoyed the arc. So I'm not mad about it. I kept waiting for like a mind wipe situation where they'd all forget the other Batman and Superman, and where they, like, cause at one point early in the story, all the heroes were kneeling before Gog. And I was like, what? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So it's fine. I still really enjoyed it.
They're just here's another universe. Which number is it? Doesn't matter. Just there's a bunch of universes. Okay, cool. Do it.
And I'm looking, I assume we're still going.
There's still time to kill this kid.
That's true.
We could still have that happen.
I always just assume any book I really like is about to be canceled. So I assume this is still going.
Did you see the Mahmoud Asrar cover for this? The way that he drew Superman's face.
It's the one where they're flying right out of this?
Yeah. Just Kingdom Come Superman.
He's got like an old boxer's face. I like it.
Oh, I know. It's so great. And there's a little smirk on Batman. It's just not, it doesn't look like Mahmoud Asrar to me, but.
Oh, it's really good. In a good way. That's really good. Yeah.
Like, he's just like, watch what else I can do. That guy's got so much talent, it's stupid.
Ultimate Spider-Man, number 2. Now we've got a Spider-Man. That's not the title of the story, but that's just what happened. That should have been the title of the story, though. That, if you turn the page.
Now we've got Spider-Man. I think you could have cut out everything but the last couple of, like, just put the last couple of pages of that last issue, maybe compress a couple of them, put it in the beginning of this one, make this your issue number 1. I enjoyed it a heck of a lot more. I thought, and just that, like, okay, I recognize what's going on here.
I mean, I get it, but we went 6 whole issues in the first one without ever seeing Spider-Man.
I don't care about that, though. I mean, like, I get it. You're going to call it that. I see what you're saying, but we knew it was going to happen. But we talked about it before, is that, like, oh, we've got, like, the middle-aged dad Spider-Man who, or, well, young middle-age, you know, and...
35.
I liked how it was... It was one of those things, like, did I miss an issue just for a second, but in a good way? Because things happened, but, like, basically, his Spider-Maning took off in between the issues. It happened off screen, you know. So at the beginning, they're talking about, like, was he in that costume, you know, and they're watching the news, and like, he got addicted while we were in between chapters.
Sure, wouldn't you?
Sure. Yeah. And
I do find it interesting that in this world where there are supposed to be no costumed anyone, suddenly there's a lot of them. I'm not even talking about Spider-Man, but it's like
Green Goblin. Was that a dictate that there were no costumes?
Well, that was the thing, right? It was that the maker, evil Reed Richards, and the
right,
you know, went to this planet, stopped all the heroes from happening. Maybe other than Tony Stark, I forget what. But basically, there's no superheroes in this one. And so you would assume that also means no villains, but well, otherwise it'd be disaster. But suddenly we've got Shocker, we've got
Green Goblin. Shocker's just the Green Goblin, I think, is the aberration. The Shocker, you could say that's like his, you know, his tech work suit. He's got a little mask on over his face, but he calls himself the Shocker. I don't know. I don't know what constitutes a super villain, but I guess having a nickname is really big up there.
Yeah.
You know, there was a bit here where, you know, older Peter Parker was both recognizable and quote unquote new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his discovering, you know, the way that he looks at what's going on, like, I'm a lot tougher and I'm very hungry. You know, that these were the observations of an older man.
A better job if he's eating 10,000 calories a day. Because that's a lot of food.
Well, here's the question, though. It makes you tougher and everything, but what does the spider venom do about cholesterol, et cetera?
I assume it's all fine because he's in better shape.
So he's just going to metabolize everything?
You assume that, the metabolism is super high. You assume it's cleaning out those arteries with spider cells or whatever, blood cells. Like, I assume he's all good.
Yeah.
Even Mary Jane's like, oh, how you doing?
I saw there's a shot with him without his shirt. And I was like, she's probably going to notice that unless he was doing pretty well before.
So the big thing here is one of his kids, his daughter, finds out. And I wasn't sure about that twist happening so quickly.
May.
But it's fine. I'm going into this as open-minded as possible, trying not to constantly.
I thought from a dramatic standpoint, if this happens and this and this and this, and she shouldn't find out. But I'm like, all right, what if it's just a fun superhero story and it's a dad who learns a thing? There is a bit, though, where he's like, let's just keep the secret between us. And I was like, oh, that's the fatal mistake. You never do that with the kid. That's going to come back to bite you. I liked the Kingpin, you know, sort of playing the news. There's a reason that the Daily Bugle is covering the Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah.
And I also like the conversation that I don't know who the other bad guy with him was, ponytail guy.
That's evil Captain Britain, who's French for some reason.
Oh, that's really funny. You know, it's like, no, you shouldn't put a light on anything. And like, you know, there's that little sort of like, what's a good criminal strategy when it comes to media manipulation? All right, let's get into it. And I think Marco Cicchetto, you know, it's properly melodramatic art.
I think the art's terrific. I loved that Peter's suit is black. It's a nod to his black and white suit. And of us, it'll be changing to red and blue in the next issue, I believe. But I like that little thing. It's almost like the original yellow Daredevil suit. You know, the first incarnation isn't the right one, but it makes sense why it's black. And I thought it was fun. I thought it's nanobites, so he can not nanobites. I did it in the last show we did. It's nanotech. Mm-hmm. So he can remove the bottom of his mouth or the whole mask at a whim. He doesn't have to take it. It's not actually a physical mask he takes off, which makes eating easier.
Well, he's going to want to cover up his head most of the time because people are like, is that Spider-Man or Kenny Loggins?
The beard makes him somewhat recognizable when he takes the bottom
mask. He looks like an anime character. Like that's what he looks like to me, which is kind of fun. In a way, like, okay, just like use that aesthetic instead of what we're used to. He doesn't look old. He's just got 80s hair and beard.
He's
whatever.
He's on the highway to the danger zone.
Tell you what, how many pages would you read of Ben Parker and J. Jonah talking in the steam room? Because you got five of them here. And I wasn't like, oh man, end this scene.
That to me is one of the most interesting parts is the different version of J. Jonah Jameson, which I quite enjoy. He's interesting.
But still with the Hitler mustache.
Well, some things never change.
Is J. Jonah Jameson the only character in fiction who's not a bad guy who gets to do the Hitler mustache?
Well, he was a bad guy before.
Kind of. Not like a villain, but yeah. I don't know. It's a crazy bit of magic they spun.
You'd think someone would just be like, listen, we realize that in the 30s people had these mustaches, but they stopped it for a reason.
Yeah. We don't even refer to it with nostalgia or it was ended except for this one character.
I mean, he could be a really big Laurel and Hardy fan.
Yeah.
And I would be okay with that. Like if they show his house, he's just got Laurel and Hardy posters everywhere.
I'm wiggling my upper lip right now just with you saying it.
That would be fine with me. Like it's just like a ridiculous amount of memorabilia, you know, commemorative plates, little dolls.
I don't see him cosplaying really as his favorite character. I don't know.
That's just what he's always doing. That would make sense. I see that. Nothing else makes any sense.
It's really good steam. Like the pages, I don't know whether to credit Chiquetto or Matthew Wilson with that, but I like the little blobs of steam. And they're not done like an Austin Powers way, covering up the bits. They're just floating
it's
around.
It's interesting because if you recall when he did Daredevil, his pages were always really atmospheric with smoke and steam and debris and stuff. And I don't remember who colored those, but I wonder if it's a combination of him and Matthew Wilson together. But I remember his pages always feel like almost multimedia. And so I wonder if that's, you know,
I don't think Matthew Wilson colored that book. Matthew Wilson tends to do the prestige stuff, but I don't know.
I think my pick of the week would have been Nightwing 111, which is a Batman Nightwing team up, which was really good. I thought it was one of the best issues of Nightwing in a long time. You know, Nightwing in the beginning of Tom Taylor's run, when Bruno Redondo was doing the art, was sort of almost like a transcendent comic. Like everyone in our community was like, this book is amazing.
Yeah.
And even you were like, this book is amazing. And then it was somewhere around the time when he added Titans to his roster, Tom Taylor did, and then they integrated Titans into the story, and Bruno Redondo left, and then we went back to Rick Grayson, and it just sort of fell off. Like, we haven't really talked about it much. It hasn't been that good.
I don't know what happened.
It's been fine. It wasn't that magical book that it was in the beginning.
Yeah.
This feels like it's back there that way. It's not Bruno Redondo on interiors. It's Sami Basri, who's a really terrific superhero artist. Bruno Redondo's coming back to the book for what sounds like Tom Taylor's final arc on it at some point soon. But I thought this felt like it did in the early days. I thought the exploration of Batman was terrific. I thought, you know, the parallel storytelling between the current day and Batman flashing back to when he first, you know, saved Dick Grayson after his parents died was good. I thought this is all really well done. And it's a shame that they stopped publishing other Batman books. But I think this is the only one that's out there.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I'm not aware of any other Batman comics currently being published. So it was just nice to see him, is what I'm saying.
I had a moment where the butler man and the crazy kid walk out of the tent. He's the heart taker. And yeah, he's very excited. I was like, what the hell was that? And I go, oh, that's the kid. And I was like, that's nice. That's very, I was glad I was able to remember that detail that they put in.
I had forgotten that too. And actually, I went back I got a page past it. I was like, wait a minute. And I went back and I was like, oh, right. That's Heartless. And that's his evil version of Alfred,
who had nothing to do with the crime.
What's
it was
name?
Really, it was a Gerald. Really, it was a really great, it almost had like a throwbacky kind of whodunit, but it wasn't who you thought thing. It was a detective story. And then you have the opposite side of, you know, Dick knowing how to talk to a kid and it being a really sort of sweet moment. And again, the value of this character sometimes is really like his great contrast to Batman, having been raised by this person, but you know, that how the influence of Alfred,
his
and Superman
empathy,
and all those other people.
Empathy.
That's it.
It just felt like, oh man, this is how the book used to feel. This is how the DC, the DCU and the Batman world used to feel. And it's a damn shame there's no other Batman comics. I mean, even Alfred's in this one a lot. Like, it's just almost like this book feels like, hey, remember all the things you used to love about Batman comics that aren't there anymore? This is going to be full of it.
I really like how how Basri does this Batman. He's kind of the bulky guy. He's not like super squat or anything. He's got the, you know, the big shoulders, the tiny little ears. This is one of my favorite sort of Batman silhouettes.
I really like Tom Taylor's Batman because he's not the cold robot Batman, which I just, I'm so tired of at this point. He's a human being under there, and he's hanging out with his kid and is talking to his kid's girlfriend, and you know, he's like a normal human being here. He's not just a cold human revenge machine.
Part of Batman for him is playing a part.
Yeah.
Like, it's being in character. Now he's a little cold. He's a little closed off because he's been through a great deal of trauma. But you're right. It's not a sociopath. It's a human. So because I don't think you can't have a story about how Dick Grayson grew into being a great person and then have this thing about his father who's the most emotionally cut off human ever. It doesn't work. Right. It lays it bare. You cannot do that.
Right. He has lots of emotions. They're just, he has to bury them. Otherwise accessing them would take him down.
Yeah.
The backup was whatever. I
didn't quite recognize that the story shifted. I thought, yeah. I was like, this is a weird flashback. Is that Francesco Francavilla?
Right. I mean, that was the only upside. I just think they're trying to make the, so some years back, one writer added in the idea that Dick Grayson or Richard Grayson, the most waspy wasp in comics, was a Romany person, which doesn't make any sense at all. So they're trying to make it work here, but whatever, it's dumb. But it looked good. And of course, there's a medieval Joker character fighting Dick Grayson's ancestor. But
it's a great page.
It's a good page.
It's a great design for the sort of jestery, like with his big hat.
It's fine. Michael Conrad wrote it. I mean, it was badly done. I just wish they would see, like, that was a mistake. We're never going to deal with that again. And then, but they did not.
Yeah. I don't know that it has legs.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is where I might sound a little like you here.
Mm-hmm.
Guardians of the Galaxy Annual Number One came out.
Mm-hmm.
Now you might think, a run of comics is going on, then an annual comes out. Do you expect that annual to be concurrent with the comics? Do you think it to be an integral part of the story that's going on, or something different?
I mean, traditionally, no. These days, it's a crapshoot. I'd really be curious to find out from someone in the editorial side why this had to be an annual and not just issue 12. I think it didn't go 11 issues or some
this
odd
is the
number.
I don't know what the numbers are. This is the final part of the story that's been going on in the main book for however many, 10, 12 issues or whatever it is.
It's the final issue of this.
By the same team.
I feel like it went nine issues.
Kev Walker.
It was weird.
Yeah. I was like, oh, an annual. I'll just see. Oh, look, it's the real team on the annual. And then I was like, this is the finale of the story,
right.
Which is such a weird choice to me. And I mean, on its own, like, I liked the story well enough. I don't know that I quite get it. I really liked watching, Kev Walker art. I think that the characterizations of the characters were kind of fun, and it was big and imagined and all that. Was it a complete success? I don't know. But it really weirded me out that it ended like this in the annual. It feels like, I mean, if I'm the creators on that,
it's bad faith. It's bad faith of the readership.
I would like to just see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's what I would want. Like,
I think it went 9 or something, and this would have been 10. I think that's what happened. But it was something like that.
That's such a strange choice on a book that, was interesting, was good. It was worth it. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I don't know if what sales have to do with it, or I just don't understand the reasoning. It's very strange. And
there
was a
saxophone break in the middle. we should also mention that Drax the Destroyer is dead now. I don't know. It was weird. I read it. I read them all. But like you, I don't think I really followed and or enjoyed the story that much, but I did enjoy reading it. So that's fine.
So this
Groot is back to normal. Rocket's been healed.
This was the 11th.
No one's dealt with Peter's hair, but that's fine.
So the series went 10. This was the 11th. Okay. And it gets to be the... Here's another one, if I'm just going to find things to be mad about.
Okay.
Don't do annuals if they're all number one. If every annual that comes out is number one, stop doing them. Or just call them by the year.
Yeah, 2024 the annual. Well, every one shot's number one just because of the way comics are published and the way people think they people buy. But it should have if they're not going to do a number, like it used to be that the annuals had numbers, so every year there was a different new number. But if they're not, then it should the number as you just said the year should be in the title. It should be Guardians of the Galaxy 2024 annual number one. That's what it should be called.
It's in parentheses, kind of, but yeah, that but might just right. be unkin. Yeah, it's just. I mean, it's. I don't know who they're catering to, but the longevity and the legacy and the sort of tenure of the comics was always, even when I was little, like that was a thing that was exciting.
Yeah.
I don't know who it's for other than the idea that there's a collector mentality or people won't buy into that stuff. But everybody we know who's our age, who started reading comics, who are the only people still reading comics for a long period of time, were brought in when there were never any number ones.
True.
Like, we all stuck around for it. It's just so like that legacy is the really the only thing that matters. I don't get it.
Was the legacy? Oh, the legacy number wasn't even on here because it was an annual.
No, right.
Tricky.
So what that means is that, and what I really thought is like when the Indicia shows up in the trade paperback, it's going to be all fucked up.
Yeah.
And someday, some young guys are going to be trying to do a comic book show and they're going to try to figure it out for their video show because all video would have disappeared and everything started over and they would have come up with a comic book video show for the first time in history.
Right.
And it's going to make it difficult.
I am very surprised that you put the Holy Roller number four on because we talked about three. You said you were not going to read the book anymore.
And that is why we are talking about the Holy Roller four, okay. Is that I just said, you know what? Let me just give this one more shot here. We got out of that first arc and I finished it and I was like, I really like that. Again, I think once I knew what it was and I can sort of like they can let it like basically the Holy Roller is a DIY superhero with a suit and a bunch of trick bowling balls. And a silly suit that looks like a bowling ball, and he beats people up and quips. This is what the book should have been. Maybe don't tell the origin until issue five, because the three issues of the origin.
You started with the hero already out there, and then you reveal the origin later. I finished this issue and I thought this book is dumb.
Yeah,
but I enjoy it.
Yes,
if that makes sense. Like it's dumb. It's dumb, but it's fun.
Absolutely. And Roland Boschi is perfect.
Terrific.
I always liked him, but like I think when he did The Scumbag, because he was the one who did the best of those, you know, I really kind of fell in love with that art. And that instantly tells me what kind of tone I'm at. This is there's some Garth Ennis going on here, which is you know, one of the things that makes up Rick Remender to a certain extent. But it was funny. It's the relationship, the situation with the sort of former best friend who makes the stuff, you know, and his dad, the Judd Hirsch dad is like, the jokes are funny. You're not going to be able to go on forever, but I had a lot of fun with this issue and I finished. And I was like, well, all right. And I was surprised like in a good way. And I really enjoyed that, which is why it's here. I'm not made of stone.
I feel like having to carry around 2 to 3 bowling balls is really inconvenient for doing anything.
The character makes no sense.
That's why like, I think it's dumb.
It's so dumb. Like he came from this weird broken home, bullied situation. Maybe not broken home, but like he hated his house and his dad. And he goes off and he's like some weird, he's acting like a Trustafarian with Greenpeace for a long time, but he's got a problem. Then he comes back and becomes a superhero. He's got all these skills that he has no right having.
Well, wasn't he in the army? Wasn't he like a Marine or something?
Before he
went to Greenpeace? I don't know.
There's been a lot in this. He tells the guys, there's a bit where two guys, there's some hate crimes in the beginning, basically, and two gay guys go into the ATM and they're getting cash. And he's
that was
like,
funny.
Oh, you going to get your hair and nails done? I'm like, no, we're getting some coke for a party. And
then yeah,
the last thing you hear, he's like, about that coke, if you were serious, you know, I'm down to party. No, just know this, the Holy Roller parties too. He gives them his phone number.
I laughed at that.
Yes.
It was very funny.
It was a good comic
funny.
Book.
Six Fingers, number one.
I feel like I've been seeing the name Dan Waters, who wrote this, a lot lately, and I had to sort of look him up, and he did some books I didn't read, he did a lot of stuff I didn't read, but I think it's gone out of my mind now. Either way, I thought, based on the cover and the title, I thought this was going to be a kung fu story. For whatever reason.
It's not.
I don't know why. I just thought the Six Fingers of Shaolin, something like that. I don't know. And we got this weird sort of slightly in the future tech story about like a very smart archaeologist type of person who also works in a nuclear factory. And basically he doesn't. He's got to get to a date, and then there's a giant nuclear spill, and he goes, I don't want to wait for those guys to come clean it up. I'll just do it myself.
Well, he works at a battery factory. That's like battery acid or something that comes out of the batteries.
It says power factory.
Yeah, it's some kind of – it's not nuclear, but it's some other kind of bad
– it ain't good.
Juju.
So he gets a six finger.
I thought the art was terrific from Sumit Kumar. I've only seen him a couple times on Justice League way back when there was a Justice League comic, but not very much. I thought this was really good. In terms of art, when you put it on the list, I thought, hey, I read that. And then I thought, hey, I don't remember anything about that. And so I had to go back, and that tells you how much of an impact it left on me story-wise. But
I had a little of that too, but I think part of the thing was I really didn't know what to expect from it. And it wasn't what I, you know, by the way, my expectation was based on absolutely nothing. There wasn't anything they did wrong. I think there was a couple of scenes in here that I thought were interesting. Mm-hmm. There's a scene where like he shows up, you know, a lot of these very classic setups. His girlfriend says, make sure you're not late for the thing. And you're like, oh, he's going to be late for the thing. And he gets there and she starts to break up with him, but he's super smart. And he's like, I know what you're going to do. And she's so mad at him for not even letting her break up with him correctly, you know. I don't know. I don't quite know what to make of it. It's all just askew enough that I found it surprising.
He's growing a sixth finger because he was bathing in that stuff. That's the title of the story. And there's something about archaeology. He's an archaeology student. And there's something about whatever's going on with this battery acid or whatever. That, like, there's a lot of things. We don't really know what this book is or what it's
about. He may have
yet.
Murdered people while in a trance, but he thought he was writing. I don't know. There was a lot here. You know, it looked really good. I mean, I sort of was looking at the art, and I was like, I don't really know who Sumit Kumar is, but this looks good. And then I said, wow, they got Lee Loridge on colors, and I think that, you know, popped it up to the next level for sure. Guy colored all the great Vertigo comics of the 2000s
and Remender books. I'm going to say something strange.
Okay.
There's a little bit of Norm Breyfogle in Sumit Kumar's work.
Okay.
It's not how you
I
would
can
expect.
See it.
It's kind of in the faces. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It doesn't draw
also
that super angular way, but everyone's kind of really like thin and exaggerated.
Well,
and
the last few pages. Those last few pages that take place like outside in alleyways, there's a lot of black shadows and stuff like that. That third to last page, kind of looks like a Detective Comics that we grew up with.
Yeah, the page that's really orange where he's sort of stumbling through the city is very much like it. Like there's a little bit in there, which is interesting. I like the article a lot.
Yeah,
I'll get another issue, but that was almost 40 pages and I don't know what the book's about, which is, you know, a problem. So. Listen, anyone's been listening to the show for a while knows we're deep into G.I. Joe again. And this was a week we had two G.I. Joe books come out. We had Cobra Commander number 2.
We took one of them off for you.
G.I. Joe Real American Hero 304. We took that one off. We took Cobra Commander off just out of consideration. What I find interesting is ever since we did the Booksplode review of G.I. Joe Real American Hero Classic Volume 1, I've kept reading. We both have kept reading. I'm on Volume 4 at this point. Almost on 4.
I'm in the 20s.
I'm in the 30s, and this book, G.I. Joe Real American Hero, this is 304, it's the same continuity, but it's 300 issues later. And I'm having a real hard time reconciling everything in my head because I've got the early continuity, I've got the current continuity, then I've got this Energon continuity all happening at the same time in my brain. So while I was reading this, I thought, wait, why is Snake Eyes talking? Then I forgot that he's a clone of the old Snake Eyes. He's not actually Snake. He's a so the damage, his face is fine and he can talk because he was cloned. So I was that, but that took me a few pages of going, why is this happening? And then I don't know. They got to do something about this zombie virus. All these Cobra people can't be half zombies forever.
Well,
the joke was good, but
like, well, it was supposed to, that was supposed to be it. Like it, you remember, I always remember this is that like at the end of Brian Bendis's Daredevil run, he stuck Matt in jail and was like, good luck, next guy. And Ed Brubaker took over. And I remember thinking, what a fuck you. But in this way, Larry Hama kind of did it to himself.
Right.
Because, I mean, I don't know what was the plan. I don't know if he knew, but they quote unquote ended it at 300 and like everybody had been hit with the virus. And I remember we were like, well, that's it. That was nuts, you know? And then they pick up right where they left off a couple of months later. I mean, that must have been planned, I guess, to a certain extent. But actually, from everything I've read from Larry Hama, he's not planning shit. He's just like just going through it. I know what you mean. I kind of appreciate what I keep thinking is like, why haven't they done something about Springfield?
Right.
It's still there.
I turned the page. It's like Springfield, a nice little town. I was like, wait, what?
In the comics, it was in Vermont. I think they said it was in Vermont.
It's in Vermont, yeah.
I mean,
it doesn't look like it.
Take it out. Why are they?
Have Wild Bill fly over the town with a very powerful bomb.
He's a straight killer, by the way, Wild Bill.
So Don Marino, I guess, is also a sort of a clone or an attempt to clone him or something. We missed all that stuff. So I'm trying to figure out as I go.
It's great. It's like reading old X-Men comics.
Right.
But good.
And the Chris Mooneyham art continues to be terrific. I know he's not doing every issue. I think they announced last week that Paul Pelletier is going to take over for an arc. But
oh, wow.
It's been good. I like Ski Mask Cobra Commander. It's a different look for him. He's got like the Imperial jacket and the ski mask. It looks, you know, appropriately terrifying. He's got the jawed purse.
Yeah, he was full Nazi. So I noticed that. I was like, oh.
It was still very good. It's just that while I'm reading the original books and reading this one and reading the other continuity, my brain is trying to really desperately hold on in a way that's not so easy for a man in his 40s.
It's fun.
Oh, it's super
fun. Because you can't get it wrong because it doesn't need to make sense.
There's also a lot of Dreadnoks right now. Like issue 2 of Cobra Commander is all about the Dreadnoks. Where I am in the original books, the Dreadnoks have just been introduced and there's a lot of them. And then the last page of this book, Zartan's there.
Dreadnoks are a constant in the animated series. Like,
yeah.
They love them. They couldn't get rid of them. And I never really liked them all that much. And I was like, why are there so many Dreadnoks all the time? What's going on with the Techno Viper? Let's spend some time with that guy.
Right. In the comics right now,
they're not British.
Right. One's Australian, one's British. And I don't know the other. Maybe there are two British and one's Australian.
In that Cobra Commander book, I feel like they were just Bayou folk.
Maybe. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I also enjoyed Cobra Commander 2 despite all of the globulous bullshit. But
I was looking at the 83 stuff like the Dreadnoughts show up and I was like, this is the same year Spinal Tap came out.
Mm.
There's got to be a connection there. Like, they don't not look like them.
Right. Well, they're also just like punks.
I get it, but...
And so every movie back then, you had the Warriors, you know, it was just like the punks. The punk movement was going around, so they were just, you know, punks. It could have been Spinal Tap, but also...
But Buzzer is Michael McKean. Ripper... Is it Ripper?
It's Ripper, yeah. Buzzer, and
Ripper and is
Blowtorch.
Right, so Ripper is Derek Smalls, and then Blowtorch is Nigel Tufnel.
Maybe. Entirely possible.
Well, at least that's what they thought when they did the voices for the cartoon, I think. The terrible, Dick Van Dyke level accents in that. They're not good.
I did like Zartan's voice, though. It always made me unsettled as a kid. So those are the books we're going to talk about, but at patreon.com/ifanboy, every patron of the show gets the vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, it was similar to last week. Last week, we had a four-way tie going into the final hours, or maybe it was a five-way tie. This week, we had another five-way tie going into the final hours, and then a bunch of psychopaths voted for Batman, and then that sneaked up for a while. And then at the very end, there was a bunch of votes for Animal Pound number 2, which ended up taking the victory. Animal Pound number 2 from Boom Studios, written by Tom King, art by Peter Gross, colors by the aforementioned Tamara Bonvillon, and colors letters by the irreplaceable Clayton Cowles. And we didn't talk about issue 1 because issue 1 happened during the winter break we were on. This is issue 2.
You read issue 1?
I started to read issue 1 over the break, and I got about halfway through, and I was like, I don't know about this, and I put it down. And so I had to pick it back up and finish it for this, and then read number 2. So here we are.
So you, like, earlier on in the week, before that was a thing, you said to me, should I read this? And I said, well, I'll skip to the end. No. I didn't really like that first issue. And with this one, because I thought we'd probably have to talk about it, so I read it again. And also, it's Tom King. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. All right, so the overall story is there is an animal shelter, the animals rebel, and they try to set up their own system within the walls where no doors are closed.
The first issue is the kind of like Animal Farm-y, and then the second issue, this one is kind of like Lord of the Flies-y.
Yeah.
In a way.
But it's basically, to me, if I'm reading it, it's an allegory about how you create either a democracy or just a society that people who are different and have different strengths and weaknesses and powers and needs and whatever can live together. And it's like how a government is formed, how people learn to get along by being noble, which is sometimes contrary to their true natures. And I think that that is very, very interesting. I think that the way that it was portrayed in this book was very intelligent. And there are bits of it where I thought, oh, that's really smart. I don't really like it that much, though.
Yeah, so issue 1 was all about freedom, right? All the animals are caged in this pound. It's a pound, so occasionally animals are taken off and put down. And so this one's – the first issue is all about gaining their freedom from the human captors and what it means to be a pet, what it really means. Maybe it's not so nice from their perspective, like all these things. Second issue is, oh, shit, we have our freedom, albeit they're locked in this – pound compound with a big backyard, but they're not free in the world. So what do? They try to coexist. Then a dog eats one of the rabbits because they're running out of food. And then it's like, oh shit, we need a government we need to be able to regulate behavior and punish people and things like that. And then you have all the different competing interests between the dogs, the cats, and the rabbits. And the second issue is all about forming a government. Like they vote, they have leadership and everything. I think my reaction is similar to yours, is that I recognize that this is really well done.
Yes.
But I don't necessarily really care. I'm not a, you know, it's just not a story. I'm very, very allergic to animals. I've been that way since I was a kid. So I'm not a pet person. I'm not a animal person. I don't go squee over at dogs. And because to me, they just represent not being able to breathe. So,
I'm not
cold-hearted about it. I really like we three got me just as much as got anybody else. But
sure,
it's an allegory, and at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I get it. It's not bad. I mean, I can think of worse Tom King books for sure. But the Peter Gross art's really, really good. It has this more of an illustrated feel to it. We've seen his art before. Great. He's a really good artist. But and he draws animals really, really well. Mm-hmm. But I was just tired reading it. It was a lot of words. And I'm often someone who doesn't – you often say too many words. And I often say it's not too many. It's how good are they. But this one actually might have been the exception that proves the rule to that, where it's like these are a lot of good words. Tom started as a novelist. Maybe this should have been a novel because there's a lot of words.
I mean, I even like it as an experiment. I like the chutzpah of going, I'm going to try this story because it's very different than what you get.
For sure.
It is and it isn't. I mean, like, you tell me I'm reading it and you're like, this is Tom King. Oh, I totally see that.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It's thoughtful and intricate and it has ideas and it's lofty.
And it examines the things that his life are all about. Like, he lives in Washington, D.C. He worked for the government.
Yes,
his wife works for the government. And this is all about, at least this issue is all about governments. And so I get it. But
me too. I think that what you said is that I actually don't. There's a rash of there's a lot of pet stories out there. A lot of I love dogs. I mean, like you are said, you don't like. I love dogs. I mine are fucking irritating, but you know I take a bullet for them. But and I'm never gonna not have one again. I like to say hi to other people's dogs. It's fine. I really don't like the stories where we get to the thoughts of the animals as if they're the animals. And we've talked about other anthropomorphic stories. So you've got the Beneath the Trees Nobody Sees. Mm-hmm. And
which is different. That's dogs as people.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, but that's an example of like, that's an animal story, but they're just humans. We're not, right. It's not like about their behavior as pets. You know, The Secret Life of Pets is like a movie that does that or something. I don't love that just as a genre. Right. And if you're going to use the animals, the allegory for a person, I like it to be pretty far off. Black Sad is, I think, an example of like it's right on the line.
Well, that's different. That the Black Sad and The Trees Nobody Sees and Wild's End, that's all more like Disney pets. We're like
right,
pets as people, not pets as pets. Not pets.
Right, I know, but what I'm saying is that like they are informed, the characters are informed somewhat by their species, but not fully. And it's not like the mind of a house cat if it could think like you.
Right.
I don't love that.
Are you afraid that knowing? Are you afraid of feeling guilty if you could hear their thoughts?
No.
No.
No. Well, not dogs. Like I think dog. I mean, like I can tell my dog's super happy when I'm around. That's the only thing that they're around for. Like they wouldn't exist.
Wants to be fed.
No, I mean, you can tell when she's happy. You know, and you can tell when she's not. And really, she's just not when she doesn't get to sit right next to you, which is a lot. Anyway, you know. But there is a point where like I don't really want to feel guilty about. I mean, there's a lot to feel guilty about. There's a lot to feel guilty about around animals, and it's like I don't think I want to feel guilty about my dogs. I feel like that's my ultimate. Now, I know Tom has like a dog who's I think a dog he's had a really long time, a very good girl, you know. But you sit there and you look at your dogs and you think about it, you know, and that's fertile ground for coming up with and telling stories. It's not my favorite kind of story. It's not bad. It's not that I don't like it. It's that I'm not super interested in it. Now, am I going to read the next issue? Probably.
I don't think I am. I recognize
and that's
it's
fair.
Well, really, really well done. I think it is. I think the writing is strong, and I think the art's terrific. I think it's a really well done comic. It's just not for me.
I just think as a creator whose work I have spent so much time looking at and thinking about, you know, like if you have a favorite band and they put it on an album that you don't really like, I want to find the thing in it that I liked about the band the rest of the time. So sometimes I give it more time. That's kind of how I think about it.
That's fair. So ratings then. Ratings.
Now, was it very successful at its intention? Yes.
Here we go.
Yes. Nope. This is how I'm sort of working. So that's true. How is that crossed with how much you actually enjoyed reading it? Because that's how we're going to look at it. Like,
right.
What do you give this? Like, it's craft-wise, you can't fault it. If you could, too many words, I guess.
It's your point is well taken. I think it's a very well-made book. That's not for me. Therefore, I'm going to give it 4 stars.
I was going to say 3.5.
Well, you know, I mean, it's not a bad book. It's not.
So you're giving it a lot of credit for what it is. Not necessarily how it made you feel.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, what do you want from me? I don't know. Can we take off a star because I'm not sticking with it?
I don't. No, I know I don't. I think that that's a. I think it's fair. I think it's an inch. I think it's very interesting. You said 4, and I was like, wow. I was going to go lower, and I love that. There was. I don't remember what it was, but there was some review that you and I and Paul did. It may have been for a movie, and we were all over the. It was Black Widow.
Yeah.
Is the and you, we were all
very
over the
hard
map.
In the movie. Then you came into the high number. No, we were like, wait
no,
a minute.
No, at the end, we all had the same number. It was like 3.5 or something like that. Like I'm really hard on things, but can also appreciate them. You know, if you're like, you hated it. I was like, we all gave it the same number.
Well, that's why the numbers are silly, but we have to do them.
Yes.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thank you for supporting the show and for voting to add a book to the rundown.
You like this nonsense. I can tell you do, because you're still here. You're listening. You've been to the show for about an hour now, and you're thinking, is this one going to go long too? And what I'm thinking right now is I'm thinking, I hope not. I would like to stop now, but I will probably do more. Anyway, patreon.com/iFanboy is how you get to keep this going. You can directly support the show, unlock shows for everybody, as has been done. There's great communities on Discord and Facebook. There's a monthly patron hangout, which does not fail to perk me up, and I hope that it feels the same way for the people who watch it either live or later on. But the patrons get that. There's a yearly membership you can do now. If you don't want to do it monthly, that's 10% off. There's tier exclusive merch. It's all there on patreon.com/iFanboy. At the $5 or higher level, you will get a patron power and access to the Discord server. And at the $10 or higher level, there's the ad-free version of the show. Our ads are incredibly entertaining.
Well, also not, this part doesn't count as an ad. It's the other ads.
Right. No, I get it. Yeah, is someone complaining about this? This is the interior. What do you call it? Internal ad?
Sure.
Whatever. Yes, go to patreon.com/iFanboy. Go to ifanboy.threadless.com. You can find our merch store. There's 13 designs there. You can put on many different items. We're proud of all the things that are there. As popular with everybody, but some are. ifanboy.com/support. This is a direct PayPal link. You know how to work that. ifanboy.com/Amazon is probably the easiest thing for you to do if you want to help support the show. I'm not saying instead of the other things, but if you're like, I gotta do something, go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. You will find a general link to Amazon. So if you buy stuff, then we get a cut of that. It's an affiliate link. You know how that works because you live in the world. Bookshop.org is a group. It's a website we have partnered with where appropriate, and there are books on links on the website. They utilize the independent booksellers of the country. This is a U.S. thing, I assume.
I just ordered a book from them yesterday.
Right. And so those books are very important to our culture.
When am I going to get to read it? 2028.
I mean, it's just my I'm lousy with books. Lousy with books. I don't. It's very slow. I can't even talk about it, but you should order from that either directly through us or just because it's a good place to be. Let's, as we said, $5 or higher level, you get a patron power.
Right.
Every week we thank a patron who has supported us at that level. We just told you where to do that. We're going to give them, and it says here, dumb superpower. I don't go with dumb. I don't subscribe to that. Original.
Dumb is in the eye of the beholder.
No, yeah, it is. And this week we have Matt Johnson. And Matt Johnson imparts a sense of rhythm to everything around him within his line of hearing. So he'll be walking, and all of a sudden, things will start to syncopate. And start, so the things will start to all work together.
Oh, with perfect he creates time. Rhythm.
Yes, it brings things together. So not unlike one of my favorite cinema scenes of all time in Delicatessen, as we go through the floors of the house and everything sort of happens in time, creating a bit of a music. This happens. It follows him around. So within Matt's sphere of existence, as far as he knows what he hears, everything is happening with a beating and appropriate rhythm at all times. There's a little symphony going on.
That's cool.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Perfect timing. You know, if you're going to go to a rock show, you want to go with Matt because they're going to be on it. And the crowd's going to, all of a sudden, all the people who are talking and distracting you and the things going, it all is going to work out time-wise. It's great. So good.
That's a good power, Matt Johnson. Thanks for being a patron. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's how you get to have one like Matt Johnson. How many Matt Johnsons do you think there are in America?
I mean, in the UK, there's a lot. There's a lot.
All right. Well, you pick an email.
All right, I'm going to do the second one. Why don't you read it? And I'm going to pull up. There's a link there. There's a helpful link, which Greg included.
Greg from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, says, this past month, I did my annual reread of Watchmen. In case you were wondering, it's still great. And several times I would claim, oh, well, that's the best part. So now I ask you what each of your favorite individual chapters of Watchmen are. Not necessarily story beats or moments, but dedicated chapters of the book. What is your favorite chapter of Watchmen? Interesting. No, I don't think I've ever thought of that before.
I hadn't either. And he said it, so I click on the links, which sort of goes through and tells you. And just from the titles, I go, oh, right. Like, it all comes back to me. I haven't read Watchmen in a while, and I regret that. I looked the other day, and the book was out. So at some point, I grabbed it, and I was like, you just got to read this again.
Right.
Now, the first one I remember is Fearful Symmetry, which, fine. But the one that is The Watchmaker. It's chapter 4.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too.
I mean, that's the one that, as a sort of formal piece of storytelling in comic book form, is crazy. I don't know if that's where I was like introduced to the idea of space-time, because I don't know that I understood it or would have.
Right.
But it's an excellent example of it, how in that character of Dr. Manhattan, all things happen at once at all times. And that was such a, I mean, it's not new in science fiction, nor was it in 1986, 87. But for me, it was new. And it still boggles my brain.
Yeah, I think that's the one. That's the best chapter, Watchmaker. I think Fearful Symmetry is also, obviously, they're all very good.
Yes.
It's funny because I've never thought about Watchmen in this way before, because I tend to think of Watchmen as being greater than the sum of its parts. Not that the parts are bad, but I tend to think of, there's great moments in it, but I don't tend to think of, wow, that's a great issue of Watchmen. Maybe because I've only ever read it collected. But
I think the issues are separate unto themselves, and they came out in issues at a time when the issue mattered. And I think that there's value. I think those single issues do have value.
For sure. I just never thought of it that way. That's
sure. No, exactly. I think that, you know, the chapters 11 and 12, it closes very strong. If you look at that cover of chapter 11, where they sort of get to the Arctic fort, and you have the great, I did it 35 minutes ago. I think that's in that issue, you know, that everything leads up to this thing that is nothing, that didn't happen. And then finally, if I had anything to say, I think chapter 1 is absolutely brilliant.
Yes.
But not the first time you read it. No, I'm like, it is good the first time, but if you go back and read it, having been familiar with the story, and you read the first chapter again, it's all there.
Right, and that's like any great, well-constructed mystery movie where you don't realize what you're seeing in the first 20 minutes, what it all means till the end. Like, that's what the beauty of it is.
But, you know, like, Rorschach is right there, you know, the center of it's right there, beginning of the whole thing. It's I don't know if that's not the first comic, but it's probably the comic that I can think of that most rewards rereading.
Oh, for sure.
It's just, it gets better.
4, 5, and 6 is Watchmaker, Fearful Symmetry, and then the Abyss Gazes also, which is the Rorschach issue, which is also terrific.
Oh, Jesus.
So I mean, 4, 5, 6 right there in the middle are, you know, pretty incredible.
Yeah. That's where they hook you.
I mean, they're all great, again, but
yes.
If you're looking, like, those are some really strong chapters in the middle. Yeah.
I liked that it was thought, because at first I was like, oh, what scenes, what things, or whatever, and he's like, what chapter? I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to have to think about this. But then when you lay them out, I instantly remember. I was like, okay, I remember what these chapters are. They stand out. I haven't read it in forever, you know, but, you know, it's just so good. It's not one of those things that's overrated. It's like, it's not even close. It's better every time you read it. And if you're not getting it, I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry.
But I'd like to congratulate Greg for asking a question about Watchmen that we've never been asked before.
That's true.
In 24 years of doing this.
I would like to thank Greg even more so for including the notes that we needed to answer the question.
Yeah, thank you.
That's huge.
Yes. Thanks for the link that delineates the chapters. That would have been, I don't know if we'd been able to talk about it.
Not just the question. He made the conversation possible, because otherwise we'd be like, what do you mean? We'd have just argued about what he meant by chapters.
Greg wrote into contact@ifanboy.com. Thanks for writing in. We've been getting a lot of great emails, and we try to do as many as we can on the show. We also have, you can write in for our Media Splode show, which is our non-comics media show. Just put Media Splode in the subject line. And thanks for everyone who writes in. We've been getting good ones. Thank you. Also, speaking of Media Splode, we have our latest special edition show. Our most recent one was our Media Splode show, where we ranked the best picture nominees. This year, we also talked about what shows we were enjoying. There's a lot of them. It took a long time. And we, but it was a fun conversation, and that was fun. And then coming soon at some point, maybe you know not those, this, maybe not next week.
You know those shows about like old actors who can't get anybody to call them back anymore? Like, I was a big star, and then no, none of the agents of the studios will return their calls. I hadn't brought that for no reason.
You're saying just, you're the Norma Desmond of
it was just a non sequitur.
I see. Well, there will at some point be a Talksplode.
Yes. I'm working on it.
We're reaching the end of the month, which means March there'll be a Booksplode. Don't know what that is yet. We haven't talked about it, but we should figure that out soon.
Yes.
Eventually there will be 12 splode media, no, talk or Booksplodes, whether it's more Booksplodes or Talksplodes. We, you know, we can't always guarantee there'll be a Talksplode just because, but we'll do our best.
Absolutely.
We'll do our best. Let's move on. You can find all the shows we just talked about, all of our splodes and our regular shows at fanboy.com. We have over 1,300 shows there. They're all on the website, or you can go to our feed. They're all there. And wherever you get your podcasts, that's where we are. If you're it's on Apple Podcasts, if it's on Spotify, if it's on Pocket Cast, Gene Cast, Shoe Cast, I don't even know what they're all called, but they're on those platforms.
Speaking of sounding old.
Zippercast.
Overcast.
I've never used anything but Apple. I don't even know what they are.
Really? You've only ever used Apple? I have Overcast. Apple got, at some point, I got really annoyed with it, which usually means it's pretty bad.
I don't even know how you're going to know. I just press play, and then when it's over, I press stop, and then I pick another one.
Like, it had something to do with the organization, or something changed. I don't know. But
anyway, wherever podcasts are sold is where you can find our podcast. And we're also iFanboy Comics on Instagram, where you can find the best of the week in panels feature most weeks, as well as find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And individually, we are C.S. Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram, and only Instagram. That is not Josh on TikTok.
Is there someone impersonating me on TikTok? Good Lord.
It'd be great if there was. But there's
you can subscribe to youtube.com/ifanboy. We post this show there, should you choose to consume it in that format. All of our old video shows are there. You can like and subscribe and do all those things should you wish to. I'm not going to demand. I'm saying it's there. It's not going to change my day one way or the other.
We appreciate it if you do.
That's true.
We definitely appreciate it.
I just don't want to be like, listen,
undersell
buddy.
Undersell it.
I don't need your approval, pal. I don't need your clicking.
Really?
I mean, I do, but it's not going to be enough to make a difference in my life. So whatever makes you happy. I appreciate the parts of it that I need to. It's just not numbers, you know. Doesn't matter. I'm tired. Please consider writing a review.
Like in general or just today?
Just today specifically. But I like that immediately I asked somebody to write a review after saying all that, or leave a star rating. I think that's funny because I forgot what the second line of this part was. Write a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever that can be done. That does help. I can point to that, to people finding the show, and therefore we can fight back attrition in the great legacy of comic books.
Thanks for listening this week, this month, as we close out February 2024. We appreciate you. And we'll be back in March with more of these shows, more of our special Media Splode and Book Splode shows. We'll have a Patreon hangout in March. Will there be a special edition show of some other kind? I don't know. We got Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2 coming up in the end of April.
I thought you were getting ahead, but then I thought when the next one comes out, it will be March. And that's...
Yeah. Yeah, this is the last February show.
It's the last age 46 Josh show.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So that's why you're so grumpy. You're officially late 40s after this.
That happens.
You go from middle 40s to late 40s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why you're right. I get it. All right. Yeah. Makes sense. All right. So let's wish Josh a happy birthday, and thanks for listening. My name is Connor.
I'm Josh. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is a real thing. Like,
if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.